Welcome everyone to this week's episode of Electric Podcast. I'm Fred Lambert, your host, and I'm joined by Seth Wintraub. How's it doing, Seth?
I'm hot over here.
Yeah, you're surviving the heat. And
yeah, it's hot.
Yeah, it's hot here too because I'm back right now in Montreal after a few months in the sunny California, which is why you see like the usual setup behind me, which I'm going to be working on, by the way. Like I just got back and I want to redo the office and make it a little bit better here. For some kind of like podcast studio and whatnot. Anyway, we have a pretty fun week this week. Oh, by the way, like it's Friday, if you haven't noticed. we did switch back and forth with Friday and Wednesday last few weeks. At first it was just like a scheduling issue. And then we were like, yeah, maybe it's a good idea to make on Wednesday. But now, we're back on Friday. Which should be, the more stable schedule going forward. All right, this week, what we're going to talk about, we have a bunch of Tesla stuff and non-Tesla stuff, but I think the biggest news of the week that we're going to discuss is the updated pricing and option from Tesla, which has become kind of very frequent, especially over the last 12 months. And what happened mostly this week started with the anticipated switch from the standard paint that you can get on the Tesla car, which was black for a long time, really. And now it's white. But when Elon announced that last month, he announced it as what we saw as a way to boost sell at the end of the quarter. Because like, hey, if you want black, black is going to be expensive, more expensive next month's order right now. And because what we're going to do is make a basic white next month. They actually didn't do a basic white, and what they did instead is made the pearl white multicoat, which is a more expensive paint job, as the standard. Not only that, they decreased the price for some cars, mainly the standard range plus, which I have to assume at this point it is the most popular Tesla car by far. I think that's a fair assumption. And it's now down to $38,990, down about $1,000, even though it is equipped with a color that was 1500 or 1000?
One color was 1000. I think red was 2000. I don't know.
Whether 1000 to I think 1500 was max for the white. So like it was more expensive. So now the whole car is less expensive and it has a more expensive color job on it. Elon said that the reason for it, for not going with a basic white, a new white that's not multicoat, is just that it would have been more trouble, like more complexity for the Tesla service to handle different parts with different colors and different retouch if they had to introduce yet another color. I mean, I say yet another color, but it's not like there's that many colors in Tesla's lineup right now. But yeah, they didn't want to introduce a new one, so they just kept the white that they already have. So great news if you wanted a white Model 3.
Not good news if you own a white Model 3 and it just got a lot cheaper.
Yeah, that has been a big trend. Even though Elon has been saying that, buying a Tesla car and is an appreciating asset now, I think he's a bit too soon saying that, because I get where he's coming from with it. He's saying that's based on the full self-driving capability, but that's based on the perception that Tesla is going to achieve full self-driving capability. And if you look at the market prices right now, that's just not the case. Like, people don't believe that Tesla is going to die. I'm not saying that it's not going to happen. I'm saying that's what the market believes. And the markets, of course, that was affect the used price of the cars, which result in the value retention of the vehicle. And what we're seeing right now is that those vehicles are going down in value a lot. And what's accelerating that is Tesla, of course, reducing the prices, which is also feeding into the whole demand thing where people are saying that there's no demand for the cars, which it's not true, but it's not true in the longer term period. It's just that Tesla is so concerned about short term, which is understandable, especially for the last quarter when they didn't have that much cash. But now that they raised some, I think they're safer. But when the cash position was low, Tesla was very required to deliver as many cars they can to in a short period of time. Now, I'm not so sure I understand why there was a need to reduce the price here. It would indicate there's to create demand, right?
I mean, that's why you reduce prices. Yeah. I don't think, but I mean, you know, on the other hand, they're trying to get more electric cars out in the world. You know, maybe that's, you know, we complain a lot about the frequent price changes, but we also complain a lot. And I say we at the Tesla community, we complain even more when there are huge price drops. So many small drops are probably better than one, just like, you know, 10 grand less or whatever. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like, I guess if Tesla wants to have a very inexpensive Model 3, it's good to have a few different tiers happening per year than one big like slash.
Yeah, that's a good point, because we're talking about $1,000 for the. I want to see the base model, but I don't know about you, but I consider the standard plus the base model for the Model 3, because if you're not even listing the car, the real standard range Model 3 is especially it's not available anywhere else than in the U.S. Other markets don't have it.
Yeah, I don't know how to think about that. It doesn't make sense.
It's only available in the
U.S. You should put it on your website.
That's not true. Technically, it's available in Canada too, but we know that in Canada, you shouldn't really buy that car. They slash the range to, 150 miles or something?
Something crazy.
Yeah.
Also,
150 kilometers or miles? It might be 150 kilometers. I don't remember exactly, but it's something that doesn't make sense with the value, and it's, of course, was only to make the standard range plus eligible for the federal tax credit. A tax credit, the federal incentive, the $5,000 discount that the federal government gives now. But it's another way to show that they don't really want to sell that car. And in the U.S., same thing. Though in the U.S., I think it's better value. Well, it's for sure better value than in Canada. It's just that they're making now the standard range plus so much more interesting that, especially now with the latest price drop again, $39,000 for that car. It's interesting.
But why would you not have the car on your site? Why is it an off menu item?
You don't want to sell it. They don't make money on it, or they don't make enough money on it for it to be worth it. So, and
but is that it actually costs more money to have like a human being take the order?
Yeah, it does.
Then I mean, it's, you know, a couple bucks in relative terms, not a huge amount, but like.
No, but what they think too is that if you force you to talk to someone instead of just straight up buying it online, then that person has the opportunity to try to convince you to buy something else.
Sell you, yeah.
They're gonna try to first thing they're gonna do with an inventory card. They're gonna check the inventory in your region. Say, hey, instead of custom ordering your standard range Model 3 right now, how about you get the car in a week? We have one in your area, and it's just gonna cost you $3,000 more, $4,000 more. But we have a standard range plus for you ready, and you get this feature, and this feature more. So that's the goal. Of course, they really don't want to sell it. Anyway, it wasn't the only change that came this week. Tesla removed, speaking of the off the menu Model 3s like the standard range, the long range rear wheel drive was also off the menu item. It's gone now. So what that creates is really like, if you want a rear-wheel drive car, you're only going to have the standard range versions. And if you want an all-wheel drive car, you're only going to have the long-range version. So there's no intercrossing between the two. So, which is a bummer, of course, because some people would prefer an all-wheel drive, but they don't necessarily want to have the longer range. You can't have that. And vice versa, maybe you'd want the longer range, but you don't necessarily want to have or need an all-wheel drive. No, you're forced to have one too. So I think that's an area for growth for Tesla, for to create demand, is for sure to create those two categories. But I really don't think right now they want to create that complexity.
I mean, if you want a 325-mile range car, you now have to buy a rear-wheel drive. You now have to buy one on the used car market. The all-wheel drive is not rated at 325, right?
Yeah.
It's 310.
So there's no car at 325 right now. But again, with that 325 thing, it was a controversial move because a lot of people were saying it was always 325. It was just Tesla was just updating. Yeah, they could always advertise it at 325. So some people say, yeah, Tesla really changed the BMS and unleashed more capacity in there, made it more efficient and whatnot. Others just said, no, it's really just an advertising change. Nothing changed in the car. And unfortunately, yeah, I tend to agree with the second theory because a lot of people never saw any change in their actual range on the dashboard. Like the range on the dashboard never actually changed after the update that claimed more range. So I'm not sure about that. I'll take that exactly. But of course, we know that based on the EPA estimate, Tesla was always able to advertise the range at 225. So it wasn't as big a deal as people saw before. But yeah, you're right. Right now, there's no option that is officially 325. And what other change were there too? Because there was some changes with the Model S and S, the standard range is gone for the Model S and they just have the long range now, so they're just saying long range and performance version. And
I mean, that makes sense. Nobody's going to buy a low-end Model S when the Model 3 is so much better of a car.
Doesn't make as much sense for the Model X, though.
Right, Model X for sure, but Model S, no.
Yeah. Of course, a lot of people are speculating that that's because of upcoming changes. We talked just a few weeks ago about how Elon said there's no refresh coming and whatnot, but we as we explained, we need to take that with a grain of salt. And while it might not be a clear refresh coming, there's going to be some updates to the Model S and X lineup within before the end of the year. And there's going to be some changes to production, of course, too, because Tesla right now is apparently trying to pack Model Y production into Fremont factory. And that will require some modification to the Model 3 and Model S and X production. So reducing the number of variants for each car should have an impact. And that's what they're doing for Model S and X. A big change that happened also on the Model S and X lineup is that the Ludicrous mode, which was a $20,000 option before this week, is now free. So if you bought that Ludicrous mode last week, you might be pissed. And you'd have good reason to be, because it was just a software feature, really. When Tesla first introduced the Ludicrous mode, there was some hardware modification. They had to increase the...
It was a fuse, right?
Yeah, it was a fuse. It was an Iconel fuse that they developed to increase the amperage between the pack and the powertrain. And they did that. But most recently, Tesla said that now they were able to just unleash Ludicrous to a software update on any performance car since much earlier this year. I think April of this year. Not even before that. I mean, last year, actually. That was last year, maybe. Anyway, it was a software update for a while now. And with the latest Raven update from earlier this year, Tesla made it a $20,000 option on the performance version, but they made it free for owners. If you're already on a Model S and X, you could upgrade to a new performance Model S and you get the $20,000 option for free, which was nice. Might have convinced a few people to upgrade their car sooner than they would necessarily have. And now it's free anyway, so it wasn't that big of a gift to them either. But it's not the norm with Tesla. You cannot, if there's a moral to this for Tesla buyers, be sure that you're absolutely fine with the price you're paying for your car at that moment for the feature that you get in that moment. Of course, there's always the thing about like the car can be updated to software over the air software update, and you're going to get more features. So that's a given. That's super nice from Tesla. And they are, almost unique in the industry in that sense. Some other companies are now starting to do it, but for the most part, they're unique in that sense. But in terms of hardware, at least, in terms of performance, be willing to say, all right, I'm paying that price, I'm okay with that, and then just make peace with it because their price are going to change for sure. And same thing again happened for the performance Model 3 too, which was in the next article on our list. A bunch of different changes happened. The price went down a lot. I mean, I remember when I bought my Model 3 Performance, it was a $64,000 car with the performance upgrade package included in it. Of course, I paid before that, but the reimbursed us because that was kind of a crazy change. Just a bunch of wheels that became free right a month later. So they did reimburse us on that. It was $64,000. Now it's $65,000 a car is. So the same car has decreased in price by $10,000 over the last 8 months or so. And now what happened this week is, yeah, there was a total decrease of the price, but they also changed a few other things. You can get the 18-inch wheel for the same price as a car. So you lose the 20-inch wheel, you can replace them with 18. Of course, some people like that for other reasons. Rolling, it's a little more comfortable ride. If your problem happens with your tires or your wheels, it's going to be less expensive too, of course. Aerodynamic improvements with the aero wheels, if you leave the caps on, that's also a benefit. So you could get that. What I don't get is that Tesla argued that, oh yeah, you can. That's the only thing that happens. But they also say that you cannot get the performance brake on the 18-inch wheel. So that's not the only change. So you'd actually lose the performance brakes too, I would assume. What we learned from sources too is that Tesla actually debundled a bunch of performance package off the performance Model 3 and made those cars available on inventory. So it's not just removing the 18-inch. You get the car in 18-inch, but you also don't get like the performance brake, like I just said, the lower suspension, the aluminum pedals, if that's the thing that you like, the spoiler, the carbon fiber spoiler, you don't get that too. And that would actually be the $5,000 performance upgrade package. So the car is effectively cost $50,000. So there's a bunch of inventory right now that Tesla was offering, at least as of earlier this week. You can get a performance Model 3 for $50,000. What it amounts to really is just, it's like the dual motor, long range dual motor, with instead of a 4.4 0-60 acceleration, you get a 3.2, and a $2,000 difference. Some people are into that. I mean, it's a noticeable for sure acceleration difference. Is it worth $2,000? I'm sure it's worth $2,000 for some people.
But so on the acceleration of the performance version, is it different hardware or is it just? At this point, it feels like it's just software.
Yeah, here's the thing that's weird. Tesla reached out to me and was like, yeah, there's an inverter, a different inverter. But I've seen the same code of inverter for both the dual motor and the performance range. I'm not sure. They might mean like it's a different software on the inverter or something like that. It might be a different hardware of an inverter too. I'm not 100% sure on that. So I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt on that and just say that's a different inverter. But for the most part, yeah, it's the... They also used to say that the burn-in thing for the validating the rear motor, that was the bigger motor on the Model 3, that they did a validation thing, that another burning process to validate it for a higher power output. But they removed that from every thing on their site, on their support site and everything like that. So I'm not sure if that's still true.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder if like they've gotten all the quality control for the motors to such a place where like they're all kind of quality.
Yeah.
They're all the quality to get in a performance one.
That might be, my conclusion on this is like, I love my car. Model 3 Performance, the best car I ever had. I think it might be the best car on the market too, period. It's just financially, I'm not sure. I'm sure actually that it wasn't a great decision. I paid a lot of money for that car. And, obviously it went down in value a lot since I got it in September of last year. Of course, I expected it to go down in value, just maybe not by that much so fast. So that on that side, it wasn't that great of a decision, but I still love the car. I think it's the best car on there. It's just that I think what's clear right now and what's clear with this latest price drop too is that the Model 3 performance is a gross margin generator for Tesla, for the Model 3 program. It's where they get the gross margin of the car. Because we just explained, it's not that much of a difference of a car in terms of manufacturing, in terms of hardware. So they do sell the standard range plus at a profit already for $38,000. So of course they make a profit on the $55,000 car too, for the little difference that has in hardware. So yeah, I think it's a big margin processor, and they thought they could get a higher margin first by taking advantage of the backlog of reservation they had for the car already from people like me and others. So yeah, that's what happened. But it's still a great car either way. Just wish that Tesla would be like a little bit more constant about the price changes. Okay, they reduce the price, but reduce it like constantly, not just go like, hey, $4,000 less on the car right now. What? And then say, yeah, but we are not like the dealership, which just changed the price all the time. Yeah, they do, but the goal was not to be like the dealership. So the goal was to be better than the dealership. So I hate that argument with the Tesla fans that defends Tesla on the constant price changes. They're like, yeah, the dealership do it too. That was the goal. The goal was like not to be like the dealership and not like feel that you got by them. Anyway, let's move to something more fun. The Supercharger V3. Elon Musk
just missed it too.
Coming in?
You were in Vegas. You were just in Vegas?
Yeah, I was just there. Though I didn't really need to supercharge in Vegas because I was staying there and coming back. So I was like, destination charging what was best for me. But I do understand that people use Vegas also as like a stopping point between other route. Like if you're going to Phoenix maybe or Utah.
I think it's more like people live in high rises there and they don't have a supercharger. So they use it more like a gas station.
Ah, that might be it too. Yeah, and they do also. We're talking about Tesla opening a new supercharger V3 in Las Vegas. Not just supercharger, though. They have 15 destination charger at the same station. So it's a huge station, 24 supercharger V3 stall, biggest supercharger V3 station yet. And I will actually, I'd argue that's the only like real fully supercharger V3 station, because the other ones are like partial upgrades from the current station. So that's the first like fully supercharger V3 station, plus 15 level 2 destination chargers. And it's combined with solar power and PowerPax energy storage system. So really like the station of the future, really, well, that happens to be now. And with that, Elon is sort of fulfilling a promise that he made like 3 years ago. If you remember, the first time that we ever heard about Supercharger V3 is from a tweet that Elon sent out to me in December of 2016. I asked about him, like, what's up with the promise that you made that the Supercharger network would be powered by solar arrays at the Supercharger station? And at that time, Elon said that they're going to, well, they said that there's already some, but were very few out of the 1,000 Supercharger station there are there. Anyway. He said that the full rollout will happen with Supercharger V3 and at the time the PowerPack V2 was just starting to, plus SolarCity, which of course now is part of Tesla.
It's funny that 2016 SolarCity wasn't part of Tesla.
Yeah, well, that's when it happened, I think. Was it right. Like 2016? So they might have placed the offer yet, but it wasn't completely done yet. So basically what he said is once they start rolling out Supercharger V3, they're going to be combining it with the rollout of solar arrays at the Supercharger station and a PowerPack system too. And the Supercharger station at Las Vegas is the first complete example. Not that, well, there are others, but V2 combined with solar and battery pack, but that's the first V3. And hopefully they are almost all like that going forward. Tesla didn't release any spec for the battery system or the solar power system, but of course we need to understand here that I mean technically that station has like a 6 megawatt max output, which is insane. Of course the solar and battery combined don't have nowhere near that, but the goal of the solar and the battery combined is to reduce the diamond charges when there's peak diamond. So of course there would never be 6 megawatt there, because 6 megawatt would literally mean that 24 long range Model 3 at almost zero state of charge show up at the same time and start charging. It's never going to happen. But for the most part, like with any charging station, the problem with it is that there's big peak of them in, and then there's very long lows. And those peak of them in result in them in charges, which can be very expensive, like extremely expensive, like several times more expensive than the regular rate. And the higher you go, the higher, the more it's expensive. So if you can just shave some of that peak with solar and with also discharging your batteries at the same time, you're going to save a lot of money. So it is worth it to deploy that. Because some people said it's like counterintuitive to deploy expensive solar arrays and batteries at your supercharging station. You're going to increase the price of supercharging. But people underestimate the cost of those demand charges. They really... Didn't we get actually a percentage of that when we were at the Los Angeles Soto show? We were talking to the EVgo guys. Remember that set? I think
yeah, he said
like it's 80% of the cost or something like that of operation.
Yeah, it was like a huge, huge piece. And our immediate question was like, well, why don't you just put batteries there to, you know, shave off the demand charges? And he's like, yeah, we're looking into it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, obviously Tesla has better access to batteries than EVgo.
Yeah, they have their own. But, so they just deploy. Right. They become their own client, basically.
Right.
If you can shave some of that top peak diamond, it's going to make a big difference. And that's what Tesla is doing here with the supercharger V3. It's located on the Caesar's Palace property. It's next to the Caesar Palace, but I think it's on the property. It's on the parking lot. So you're on the strip. You're right on the strip in Las Vegas. So not the greatest spot to go if you're just passing through and just want to charge. But like you said, it makes sense if you live downtown or live in the strip and you just want a quick charge, get yourself charged for the week.
Yeah, I mean, if you're staying in one of the other hotels, theoretically, you can just pop over there, maybe, you know, play a couple slots and then get your car back. And
yeah, but a lot of those, you're right. If you're just like, you're not staying there, but if you're staying there though, a surprising number of the hotels in Vegas have this ignition charger in their own parking lot. So
that's true.
If you're willing to pay for the valet fee, then you're going to be charged the next day. So it can be worth it. That's what we did when we stayed in Vegas 2 weeks ago. But yeah, that's pretty much it for the supercharger V3 in Las Vegas. Moving on. We're just talking about the appreciating assets that have now become the Tesla vehicles. Sort of. Elon put a price on it, right? This week. He said that that Tesla vehicles, he didn't say a particular model here. He just said that a Tesla with full self-driving package should be worth $100,000 to $200,000. He said that based on the utility rate of it. Increasing from just 12 hours a week. Is that really the average use time of a car per week?
12 hours?
Yeah. To 60 hours per week.
That'd be 2 hours a day.
Yeah.
6 days.
Yeah, that's all.
Yeah, maybe.
60 hours is a lot more, no. Though I feel like it could even be more than that if it's self-driving. Though you have charge time too, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, why would it take breaks or anything?
Yeah.
If it's self-driving, like, just go all night.
Yeah, just need to charge and that's it. Some maintenance stop, some washing. You're going to need to wash that car, clean it regularly. Maybe
Tesla's working on the snake charger, but also the snake vacuum cleaners that go in and clean your car between Uber outings.
Yeah. So, he said that. He added that Tesla will charge a percentage fee on also being on the Rebel fleet, the Tesla network we've been talking about. And he said that it will rise to whatever the clearing price is. Otherwise, all car would be barred by scalpers, a bit like ticket holders, really. And so that he's trying to make the argument again for the car to be an appreciating asset. And I completely agree that it would be. As long as Tesla deliver on self-driving and increase the price of the self-driving package based on, as soon as they do it, they should theoretically have, you shouldn't initially increase after that. once they achieve full self-driving, then they should just massively increase the price of the package, and then that'd be it. Of course, those cars won't be appreciating asset once you buy them at that price, because the price is fixed. So at that point, the car won't be appreciating asset. The current cars, if they are upgraded to full self-driving, then they became appreciating asset from back when you bought them for whatever it was, the $40,000 to $120,000. And then those new cars will be revenue generating assets.
So tell me something. Is Elon and Tesla putting themselves in any sort of risk if they don't get self-driving nailed by the end of the year or next year or maybe even the following year, when Elon's been like, hey, buy my car, it's an appreciating asset, and you buy a car based on the CEO's words that it's going to appreciate, and lo and behold, it's lost a lot of value in 2 or 3 years. Is there going to be not a shareholder lawsuit, but a lawsuit from, you know, car owners saying, hey, this guy told me it was going to is going to go up?
I mean, I think you have a point here, because with all that happened with this SEC stuff with Elon's Twitter, and he hasn't only been saying that on Twitter. I think he said it on the a podcast too, and he said it at an official Tesla shoulders meeting. So he's been saying that a lot, and I think you can take that as official statement from Tesla, really. And so if you take that as official statement from Tesla, then yeah, there's a case to be made that if people buy that with the anticipation that they are appreciating asset and then they don't become ones, I think there's a point for a lawsuit here. But I do believe that Tesla has the right strategy for full self-driving. I do believe they will achieve full self-driving. I doubt it will be on the Elon's timeline, though. So probably not next year. Doesn't need to achieve full self-driving, though, to become an appreciating asset. If it becomes clear at some point that Tesla is on the right track and is going to achieve it, because right now, the only thinking that Tesla is on the right track, I mean the minority here in the entire market. The market doesn't believe that Tesla is going to achieve full self-driving with their current approach. They don't believe in the vision-based only system. Most people in the industry think that Tesla is going on a wrong track. So that's what resulted in the Tesla vehicle depreciating, even though they are equipped with everything based on Tesla, that would result in full self-driving. So it's all a perception thing right now. If the perception changes and then people realize, oh, Tesla might be right. So if Tesla released like just a perfect demonstration maybe or something that, oh, yeah, we're almost there. We just need to figure out a few corner cases and everything like that, and we're going to have it or something. But they did that a few times. So we've now seen like, what, 2 or 3 full self-driving demo from Tesla. But every time it's like the same route in Silicon Valley and somewhat predictable. And there's evidence that they did several pre-trial run and everything, so it's not as impressive. Yeah, it's a tricky situation, really.
Yep.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the Roadster. Of course, we like to talk about the Roadster, you and I, because we suppose it, what happened here? Sorry about that. I just lost my.
I can still hear you.
All right, I'm back.
You got so excited about the Roadster.
I did. Yeah, we're supposed to have a few coming. So when are they coming, though? I don't know. And that's one of the points that we make here. Yesterday, Elon was talking about the Starhopper hover test that they're testing their latest spaceship, and they want to do an hover test with their latest engines at SpaceX. So I jokingly, but it was really calculated here, ask about a Tesla Roadster hover test with the SpaceX package. Of course, what I really wanted to know is, like, if they do that, like, well, I really want to see it, first of all. Of course, I want to see it because there's never been cooler thruster in a car before. I want to see what that looks like and what kind of performance it delivers. But I also wanted to see, like, what's the timeline on that, because whenever we're going to see that means that the actual release of the Roadster should be closer. And more recently, Elon has made it clear that the Roadster is not a priority for Tesla, and it's not clear when we're going to ever see the Roadster, which was supposed to come as soon as next year. So what he said, he responded to my tweet saying that maybe end of next year. So that's the end of 2020.
So is it possible they'll release a Roadster before they get the rocket boosters going?
That's a good point. That's something that people have brought up to me since, but I don't think so, because the whole thing is that they have the Roadster Founder Series, which is the car that they released first, and it's supposed to be fully equipped with all the capabilities of the Roadster. So that, I would assume that would include the SpaceX package. So I think they would be the first batch, the SpaceX package would be available. Maybe I'm wrong, so maybe that's not it, and the Roadster would be released first. But I think that timeline that Elon indicated right now, which means a test in the end of 2020, so we wouldn't expect an actual production car until 2021 at the very least, I think that's much more credible. All right. He also said...
I was just going to add that Elon had said that, you know, in building the Model X, he said, and I quote, "I particularly need to fault myself for a fair bit of hubris for putting too much technology all at once into the Model X." Right? So he was like, we made it too complicated.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we're here a couple years later and he's building rocket engines onto the Roadster.
To his defense, the Model X was more like a little more of a mass market car, like high volume car, while the Roadster is a $250,000 sports car, like super car, hyper car even. So I would give him some wiggle room to put some crazy tech in there. Like if you're buying a car like that expensive, like it would be cool to have some kidding. I'm in the minority, I think, but I'm excited for the SpaceX package. I think it'd be cool. I think it's good.
I don't want it.
I mean, yeah, I know you don't want it. You don't even want the car, really.
Get the leaves off the driveway. You know, you get the leaves off the driveway, and maybe some snow. Like, I don't know, is it going to be good enough to push snow to plow your driveway with it?
I have trouble imagining how it's going to be like, and I'm not the only one. This designer, Charlie Automotive, he delivered some kind of concept for the Roadster with the SpaceX package, and he matched it, like he did a matchup really with Back to the Future kind of design, and he said, oh, that could be what the SpaceX package looks like. Of course, you have the big vents and thrusters in the back of the car, like What was the Back of the Future car? DeLorean?
DeLorean.
Like DeLorean and the Back for the Future. And so people's like, is that going to look like that? Elon commented, of course, not. Like, it's going to be much more subtle, which I think was obvious. But he added that it would be hidden behind the license plates.
I don't understand that.
I think because he said there's going to be 10, I think, thrusters around. So there's at least going to be like one or two in the back. So I think those one or two is going to be hidden behind the thruster. So it's just going to be like the vents are going to be around the license plates. Maybe not directly behind it. It couldn't be just behind it, right?
If it blows snow off my driveway, I'm cool with it. That's it.
You said you only want to keep the car.
No, if there's multiple cars, I'll keep it.
You'll keep one. I'll pay the tax with the other and the.
Tax and insurance and liability and
yeah, big liability insurance. I mean, well, you lose the back seat though, so you cannot carry the kids around and the wife. With the,
right, that's a good point.
If you had the SpaceX package,
but it would plow your driveway, so it's like,
well, you really don't want to plow your own driveway. That's what happens.
Well, can you imagine? Like, you could do your whole yard. You could just drive it around your yard, blowing leaves off.
Yeah, I really want to see that. Okay, again, I have difficulties imagining what it will look like, but that's why I want to see a demo of it. All right, Gigafactory number 3 in China, in Shanghai. We got a little update this week from Morgan Stanley. Their Chinese team went around and did a supplier channel checks, and they came out with a clearer timeline to production based on all the suppliers that are going to supply Gigafactory in China, and then they came out which a much more optimistic look than they had before. And they do believe that production should start in November of this year, which would be impressive because if you guys remember, Tesla started construction in January. So brand new building, a brand new factory, a brand new production line within 11 months would be a massive success for Tesla. And they said that they are in talk with Lithium and LG Chem for supplying batteries, but they think that's going to be for models coming out of the second half of 2020. So they must have another deal with battery suppliers for before the second half of 2020. Or I'm thinking that Tesla might just end up shipping like complete drivetrains from the US to China and then assemble the rest of the car there, and that's going to be the production until then. I think that's more likely, but it's not. That's not clear. That's just my whole speculation. That's not from that report here. That report, they also speculated on the production volume going forward from Gigafactory 3. And that's where they're a little bit more pessimistic, at least more pessimistic than Tesla at the release. They're talking about next year being able to produce 35,000 to 40,000 cars. And remember, Tesla is talking about exiting 2019 with 3,000 cars per week, a production rate, which is 150,000 cars a year. So big difference here. And they ramp up to 60,000 in 2021, so still far away from what Tesla wants to be. Then they say they're going to peak in 2024 at $250,000 car per year. So that's a lot more. But the thing that in 2030, which, why are you even trying to predict 2030 at this point?
I know.
That's how, by the way, they're going to go down to 160,000 to 170,000 range. All right, I'm going to call bullshit on that. That's ridiculous. But anyway, they say that. I think Tesla has a lot more potential in the Chinese market than people think. It's the biggest auto market right now. It's the most demand for electric cars anywhere. And a market that's really excited about new technology, really excited about luxury brand, foreign luxury brands too. I think Tesla has a big market here just with the Model 3, Model Y. When they combine that in 2021, 2022, I could see 400,000 cars a year there alone. Easy.
Yeah, it's kind of the best of both worlds. You have Tesla, which is a foreign luxury brand that, you know, still has some cachet, although China right now is not so hot with American stuff. And then you have built-in China that also helps justify the vehicles.
Yeah, very interesting. All right, quick update on the Tesla's Autopilot safety report that came out earlier this week. So we've been talking about that, and that Tesla releases that quarterly now. They release the million of miles between accident on autopilot, without autopilot. And now what they did is they added another data point that's interesting, is that they included, because normally they just compare those data with NHTSA's overall data of mile accident per mile. And people argue against all of that, because of course if you go with NHTSA, it includes all cars all together, which is not really comparable to the more recent luxury cars that Tesla delivers, and that represent Tesla's fleet. And if you compare autopilot, which is without autopilot, then most of autopilot mileage is on the highway versus non-autopilot being on surface street where accidents are more likely. So not a great, though people also use autopilot on surface street, so who knows. But what Tesla added is cars that don't have their own cars that don't have autopilot. So between 2012 and 2014, Tesla built a bunch of cars, not that many, so the data is not that good again there, but a bunch of cars that just don't have autopilot at all. Because the other thing, of course, too, is that if you go without autopilot, those cars are still equipped with active safety features powered by autopilot. So very complicated data to look at. Not perfect, but it's the best we have, unfortunately. But then if you compare it with the car without autopilot or any active safety feature, then it's become more interesting. And those cars apparently they get an accident every 1.4 million miles. You compare that to the cars on autopilot mileage active, that's one accident even 3.2. So more than you're half as likely to get an accident on autopilot based on that. But then you can also get the car when the autopilot is not on, that's 2.1 million. So also less likely there. But there you also have those active safety features powered by autopilot. Whew, that gave me a headache. All right, and with this quarterly report, too, Tesla also added new data about fires. So the reason why Tesla released the autopilot data in the first place is because they thought that the media was unfairly covering their crashes, often blaming the accident on autopilot, even if it wasn't the case. Same thing with the fires, really. So Tesla said, let's release data about that, too. And though they're not releasing the quarterly data, and I talked to Tesla about that, and it sounds like Tesla doesn't want to release quarterly data because they said that there's just not that many accidents so that result in the fire. So if there's a bunch of them just in one particular quarter, there can be none in the other, and the data varies too much. So they want to go more like on an annual thing. So now they released all the data for 2012-2018, during which they say that a Tesla vehicle catches on fire for every 170 million miles travel, which they compare that to the National Fire Protection Association, where one vehicle fire happens every 19 million miles, which is, of course, almost a tenth of the chances of Tesla, 10 times more likely than a Tesla vehicle catching on fire. However, the NFPA data includes cars that caught on fire even if it wasn't the fault of the car, like arson or a garage fire that wasn't the fault of the car, and the car, of course, caught on fire because it wasn't a garage. So Tesla also included those data inside, and they just, since the NFPA doesn't make the difference between them, Tesla decided we're going to at least make the difference between us. So 15% of those one car per 170 million miles was the result of things that have nothing to do with the car. Again, arson or a garage fire or something like that. So do what you want with the data. Again, the data is not perfect, again, because that NFPA data of one every 19 million miles includes all cars in the U.S. fleet right now. And the U.S. fleet is on average a lot older than Tesla's fleet, because Tesla only started delivering cars in volume in like 2014, maybe. I would like consider that higher volume. And even then, the volume is so much higher right now that the average age of Tesla's fleet is probably like 2 years old max. So older cars are more likely to catch on fire, and that's especially true when you take into account your car is carrying around a tank full of inflammable gas liquid. So yeah, I think Tesla is right to defend himself on that. But at the same time, they didn't release the data for 2019. They did it up 2018, not quarterly. They've been a rash of Tesla fire lately. Like in the last quarter or so, like we've seen like six or seven in a short period of time. And Tesla did release a software update to prevent some of those, to help prevent those. So, I mean, there's some reason for concern too at some point. Definitely it was. Otherwise, Tesla wouldn't have released that software update. So, things should be taken in perspective, of course. You want to talk about Bob Lutz, your friend Bob Lutz, a little bit?
Oh, sure.
Bob Lutz, some people thought that Bob Lutz was like turning around on his opinion about Tesla, because he released an op-ed in the was World and Track, where he went to a Tesla store with a tape measurement. It was like, oh, tunnels gap at Tesla's are pretty good now. Like, oh, now he's on board with Tesla. He's not. He came out this week again in a new interview, going hard after Tesla, saying that basically the company is doomed. Their fate is sealed. They're losing money and everything. All right. Of course, it's Bob Lutz does not have as much a big impact as he had before, but he's still like a regular commentator on CNBC and stuff. So he has some influence. My problem with him is that he keeps lying. In his comment, he said Tesla had 400,000 pre-orders for the Model 3. In fact, they only sold 80,000 to 90,000 of them. And they have trouble selling them. Tesla delivered 145,000 cars in the Model 3s in the US alone last year. They're on track to beat that this year. So where does he get the 80,000, 90,000 figure? No idea. Then he said the Model S is 10 years old. It's not. It's 7 years old. Sales are sluggish. We need to give that to him. Sales are indeed sluggish. But we explained that in previous episode why it is the case and why we think that's not necessarily going to continue like that. And Model Y is an ugly vehicle anyway. You heard that, Seth? Your car is ugly.
Ugly, huh? Hmm.
And you think that he also, his main argument is that competition is coming and it's gonna kill Tesla.
Well, I mean, there is competition coming, but they're coming very slowly, and you know, across the board the specs just aren't great. Like you know, Audi and Jaguar and Mercedes all have you know, Model X killers with the quotation marks. And none of them is even close to the range. None of them come close to the speed, you know, the acceleration. Even like the room and of course the charging network. Like everybody's kind of like 5 years behind at best. And they're not, there's not a way for them to catch up like in one big swoop. So, you know, maybe, you know, maybe next generation of, let's say Audi can hit 300 miles and, you know, can, you know, maybe Electrify America will triple their planned charger rollout and, you know, all the other things that have to happen. But, you know, as it stands now, it doesn't seem like catching Tesla is possible.
It's not impossible, I don't think. You're right that... Another vehicle program, and I leave us scratching our head, like just how far behind they are. There's a few things that are exciting coming up, though. The Porsche Taycan is definitely one of them. Looks to be pretty close to Tesla, and it looked to be beating Tesla for the charge rate at 350 kilowatts. But what we learned last week after the Car Magazine got an early test ride of a prototype is that it's not going to be delivered with 250 kilowatts. 250 kilowatts is going to be delivered with 250 kilowatts, which is just happens to be what Tesla upgraded the Model 3 charging capacity to. So they're just really matching Model 3. They're not beating the Model 3 charging capacity, which is kind of a bummer. But at the same time, there's not that many 250 kilowatt stations on there. So it's not like they would have been that much used to it. They said that they're still working on the 350 kilowatts capacity, but it's going to come in 2021. Now, what? Yeah.
I mean, certainly there'll be a new Model S and X.
Refreshed
one by then that will charge at some rate close to that.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. So, a couple things. One is the Taycan is starting to sound a lot like a Model 3, not like a Model S. It has a very small interior space. The acceleration is not quite as good as ludicrous. So, kind of falls into the Model 3 performance. So I think when it finally does come out, it's going to be, you know, in specs wise, in a lot of ways, going to be more comparable to the Model 3 performance than the Model S. I mean, I think it's only a 4-seater.
That's another thing that came out of that report. They said it was a 4-seater in there. We knew it was a 4-seater for the Mission E concept on which the Taycan is based on. But the assumption is that with the production version, they're going to update it to a 5-seater. Now, I mean, it's still a prototype that they wrote in, so I don't know if it necessarily means that's going to be a 4-seater. That would be surprising to me. I think your argument is fair. Though, again, I find it hard to compare it necessarily to a Tesla vehicle. They're going for a different thing. I think they're not necessarily going after Tesla sales or anything like that. I think they're more going like, let's stop the bleeding if you want an electric car, you can stay with Porsche. You don't need to go with Tesla. So I don't think it's really like, right. let's steal market share. Let's keep you on it. And that's where they are pushing hard the whole, it still drives like a Porsche. You can still bring it to the track. Like they push with that stuff instead of really trying to match Tesla, I think. But coming back to the charging rate thing, they've been pushing so hard at 350 kilowatt charging capacity that the thing about 2021 is it going to be like Tesla's with the Model 3, which they later on they upgraded existing car to 250. So in this case, it would be 350. Or are they talking in 2021 they're going to release a new car with a 350 kilowatt capacity? That would be two completely different thing, and of course the latter would be a lot disappointing. Especially since they're trying to sell the car now. So would you wait for having the 350, not buy now, but buy later? So I don't know. Like, I would like some clarity on that. I think that would be fair.
Yeah, it's kind of frustrating because Porsche has been kind of touting its ability to charge in 14 minutes all the way. So, like, if the car that comes out can't do that, it's a little bit of a head fake. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, obviously other car companies, including Tesla, do those kind of things, but it's a little bit disappointing because we were actually kind of excited to see a car charge at 350 kilowatt.
Yeah. And we've seen also before, well, it was a few months ago, Porsche released a video of it was a prototype Taycan with a different powertrain than the one they were working on, was charging at 400 kilowatts. So they even already looking beyond that, but yet they are. Oh, it's frustrating. Another crazy car. How do you pronounce that? The Lotus, they unveiled their new hypercar, all-electric hypercar.
Well, Avija?
Avija? E-V-I-J-A. Avija?
Avija.
It's a $2 million... 2,000 horsepower, all electric hypercar. And it has only a 72 kilowatt battery. Is that it? What was it?
Yeah.
I don't see the spec here. 70 kilowatt hour battery pack.
Yeah.
250 miles of range. That's what they claim. That'd be surprising. Well, maybe if they're like, but not with, you don't push it. you don't go get the 200 PC as a 17 newton meter of torque to get that kind of range. You don't drive at 300 kilometers an hour.
It's crazy. It has, I mean,
no, 9 seconds. Okay, sorry. The 300, 0 to 300 kilometers an hour. I read 3 seconds. Like, that's impossible. No, 9 seconds. You can get to 300 kilometers an hour.
It also has a 2 megawatt output battery. So the battery is 70 kilowatt hour battery pack, but it can output 2,000 kilowatts, which is 2 megawatts. And that's kind of crazy because that's even more than the 2,000 horsepower between four wheels.
Yeah, so it would indicate that there's another bottleneck somewhere in the drivetrain where the power pack can output more than the... Yeah, it's crazy because Tesla to do their like the Roadster is expected to be around what, 1 megawatt maybe,
right?
Tesla to achieve that the power to energy ratio is like much closer with the 200 kilowatt hour battery pack. They do want to do that with a 70 kilowatt hour pack. I mean, I'd like to see the long term impact of that car, like the effect on the battery degradation, things like that. If you can really just push that car. Because it's a relatively small battery pack with a hit. It's almost like, are they using super capacitor at this point? Like, what is it?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, for $2 million, you could get a new battery pack every year, probably.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, you don't care. And those, of course, when you buy a $2 million car, it's not your daily driver. It's not the car that you drive every day. It's a weekend car. And even there, it's your fifth weekend car. That kind of money. All right. China. They get all the good things when it comes to EVs, and they get it first, and they get in high volume because of their aggressive ZEV mandate. And Nissan, with their partner, with their joint venture, Dongfeng joint venture, which is a state-owned automaker there, they unveiled this week a new pickup truck, a new electric pickup truck, which you claim as a 250 miles range, of course. That's trying to normally advertise any DC, which 200 miles more likely. And it's a good-looking pickup. I mean, well, it's based on the Nissan platform, so it's really reminiscent of the regular-looking Nissan truck. It's not one of those neighborhood pickup truck that, like, the NEVs, like the neighborhood electric vehicles that people call a pickup truck, but just because it has, like, a three-foot bed doesn't make it a pickup truck. Not that this thing has a major bed either. Like, what's the bed on this? 1,500 millimeters. What is that? That's 1.5 meter. What's 1.5 meter?
That's not very big.
It's not very big, but it's not that small either.
Yeah.
2 feet. That's 5 feet. Almost 5 feet. Not bad. It's not a full size 6 feet, but it's decent. What did I
say? I mean, everything in this is all believable, but then it comes down to the price, which is 19,000 US. Which that
after means. Subsidies, after subsidies,
right? But still, even half, like double that price, like $40,000 for an electric pickup that goes 250 miles, like that would be pretty insane.
Yeah,
like nobody could release that in the US right now.
Nobody can release that in the US. It has a 68 kilowatt battery pack, so the 250 miles of range is, of course, like completely empty, like with the 20 pounds human driving it, maybe, but right. Like it's so they're stretching it for sure. I think 200 miles of range is more likely if you're pulling something. Like there's also a max load capacity of only 1,000 pounds. That's something to consider too. So it's not
right.
It's not that great of a pickup for a work truck. It's not that great of a truck. It's very but basic. Still,
the price is crazy.
The price is crazy, but like, the subsidies, it might be close to 50% of the price with the subsidies.
Oh, is it?
In some markets, it's pretty impressive. So it might be like a 30,000 plus truck. And if it was in the US, for example, I don't think it's completely unbelievable if they do it mass volume. If they are using it, it's a conversion truck too. They aren't using like an existing gas powered truck platform for it by Nissan. That's what Dongfeng right. used in the, for the, it's called a Rich 6 EV, but I mean the Dongfeng Rich 6 EV. There's already a Dongfeng Rich that's gas powered. So if they're just converting that, well, it might be lower cost. I don't know. Still, it's promising. It's showing that there's a market for it, I'm sure, at that price. I'd like to see that in the US. There's people that are starting to try to import Chinese electric vehicles to the US. Volvo with the Polestar is going to be making the Polestar 2 in China and is going to export it worldwide. There's a few other examples of that. So it's not impossible that we've seen some of those cheap Chinese EVs coming to the US. Less so maybe with the current political war over the tariffs. So that's going to be a problem.
Yep.
Anyway, that's pretty much it for us this week, guys. Thanks a lot for listening. Thanks a lot for watching on YouTube. You can hit the like button and subscribe. And if you're on a podcast app, you can also subscribe and leave us a review. That always helps too. We appreciate it. And we're going to be coming back next week, same time on Friday again. And see you soon. Have a good week. Bye-bye.